The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Thank you very much again for having me here. So what I'm going to talk about this morning is everyone's favourite topic, Israel Folau, and the issue of religious speech in the workplace. I thought I'd choose a nice, easy one where there won't be any disagreements and we'll all have exactly the same views. That was sarcasm, by the way. So as I think all of us are aware, some time ago, Israel Folau posted some controversial comments on social media, saying that homosexuals, among other groups, such as liars, adulterers, drunks and atheists, are destined to hell unless they repent. And he was then subsequently sacked by Rugby Australia. Many viewed these comments as variously discriminatory, as a kind of hate speech or vilification or something like that. And it's understandable why, in the sense that...
No.
And it's understandable why, because, if particularly for members of the LGBT community, they saw that as a target. They saw Folau as kind of undermining their humanity and their dignity and putting them on a par with other kinds of immoral people like liars and adulterers and so forth. And so that post got quite a strong reaction. Rugby Australia said that he breached an employment code of conduct, which required diversity and inclusivity, and so they sacked him for a breach of his contract. Now, Folau says that he was unlawfully dismissed because of his faith. He says that his social media is a way for him to teach about and to proclaim the Christian faith. And he thinks that he is being loving because he wants all people to come to know Jesus. He wants all people to realise that they, no matter who they are under God's judgment, and the only way to avoid God's judgment is to turn away from their sin and to trust in Christ and to receive salvation. So that's kind of, those are the two perspectives that are, in a sense, competing here. From a legal context, some are framing this as a simple contractual issue. Folau had a contractual agreement not to engage in that sort of conduct on social media, and he did, and thus he breached his contract. Others see this as a religious freedom problem. Folau was prevented from expressing his religion. I actually think the two are not separable in this specific context. We have a situation where, in effect, you could argue an employment contract restricted the religious speech of an employee. So what do we do with that? Or is that appropriate? I'm not going to answer that question, but that's something that we can think about. I just wanted to bring your attention back to the passage that we read earlier. And I think there's some interesting parallels there between the Folau situation and what's described in the passage. So we could see, for example, Israel Folau as the servant slash slave or the employee in that passage. We could see Rugby Australia as the master, as the employer. And so Folau, for example, might say that the master was being unjust, that Rugby Australia was unjust in this situation. They sacked him for no good reason, simply because he was expressing his religious belief. Whereas from another perspective, Folau has, in a sense, sinned and been beaten for it. You know, he's done the wrong thing. He's breached his contract and he should suffer the consequences of that. And that's not an argument for him being some sort of martyr. That's just, those are just the earthly consequences for doing the wrong thing. And furthermore, you could perhaps say that Folau has responded in an unchristian way, according to this passage, by pursuing legal action. Even if the master, Rugby Australia, was unjust, the Apostle Peter says here that, like Christ, we shouldn't revile in return or threaten in return. you could see legal action as that kind of conduct, rather than for Lau simply entrusting himself to the one who judges justly, which is not a court of law in this passage. It is instead God himself. As an aside, I think there needs to be a more robust theology of the employee-employer relationship. Because I mean, I didn't search very deeply, to be fair, but I don't think there's much out there, particularly in this kind of modern context where the employee-employer relationship is so central to an employee's life. So I want to come back to Folau in a moment, but now I want to consider the religious discrimination bills that the Attorney General recently released an exposure draft of and received submissions, and those submissions are now under consideration, as far as I'm aware. Now, the religious discrimination bills reflected public debates about religion, which stemmed all the way back from the same-sex marriage debate and went through various religious freedom issues, and were kind of made central by Folau, I think. Folau was one of the catalysts for the way these religious discrimination bills were framed and discussed in public discourse. And so I want to focus specifically on the so-called Folau provisions in the religious discrimination bill. So Section 8, Subsection 3, and I'm paraphrasing here, it states that an employer conduct rule, which is imposed by a relevant employer, that is an employer with a $50 million revenue over a year, a conduct rule which has the effect of restricting a statement of religious belief by an employee outside of work is not reasonable. And so under the scheme is discriminatory. So that's the general proposition. The general rule is that an employer conduct rule which restricts the religious speech of an employee is discriminatory. Unless, and here's the exception, compliance is necessary to avoid unjustifiable financial hardship. And then there's a further exception in Section 8, Subsection 4, where the statement of religious belief is malicious, is likely to harass, vilify, or incite hatred or violence, or it may reasonably be viewed as promoting conduct which would constitute a serious offence, then the rule doesn't apply. So I wanted to identify a couple of issues with that, which go to the Folau issue quite specifically. The first is that the financial hardship exception, as it's expressed in the draft provisions, effectively submit what is a fundamental human right, the right to religious freedom or belief, to the whims of corporate and financial interests. It's saying that if a rule imposed on an employee would cause unjust... if not imposing that rule would cause unjustifiable financial hardship, then that rule is allowed. And I think that's a problem. Second, the effect of the rule is actually to impose financial threats on employers to make employees toe the line. So one of the issues in the Folau case was that, allegedly, Qantas put pressure on Rugby Australia to do something about Folau, perhaps even to the extent of threatening to withdraw sponsorship. Now, I think if these religious discrimination provisions were in force now, Rugby Australia could quite easily argue that they would have suffered unjustifiable financial hardship because Qantas had threatened to withdraw their sponsorship. And so they could have used that as a justification for enforcing the rule. So even though the design of this provision was clearly to address a Folau kind of issue, it probably wouldn't have helped Folau in his specific situation. And another issue is the question of what vilify means. So in the scheme of the legislation, if a statement would tend to vilify, then that religious statement is allowed to be curtailed by the employee. The problem is that vilify is not defined in the legislation. The ordinary principles of statutory interpretation indicate that vilify is a word which means something in the same class as, but not exactly, malicious or likely to harass or incite hatred or violence. So if it means that, then the word vilify is essentially superfluous. But if it means something different, then vilify should be defined more clearly. many people, I think, would view Folau's posts on social media as vilifying homosexuals amongst other groups, using a broad definition of vilification. But because we're not sure what that definition is, we're not really sure how wide that exception extends and whether it would effectively just overwhelm the rule in the first place. So those are some issues that have been identified by not just myself, but a few parties in relation to the proposed religious discrimination legislation. So then that brings us back to Folau. Where do we go from here? There's the legal context. There's the theological context. There's also the context of what it means to have good relations with people with whom we disagree. In terms of what you might call the legal context, Folau's statement, I think, falls within the definition of religious freedom. Religious freedom includes the ability to teach about one's religion, to even to proselytize, to evangelize. That's all part of the framework of religious freedom. In a technical sense, Folau's statement was not hate speech or discrimination because he didn't target a specific group. He targeted lots of different groups, which in effect encompass everybody. For example, everybody is a liar. So he didn't target any specific groups that were also not targeted. And he didn't attack any group directly. And he didn't treat any group detrimentally because of their attributes, which is the hallmark of discrimination. Now, from a theological perspective, I think there's a strong argument from that passage in 1 Peter that Folau needs to submit to Rugby Australia. And it doesn't matter whether the employer, the master, is just or unjust. The Apostle Peter makes that quite clear. You still must submit to unjust masters. But there is an exception which is expressed elsewhere in the Bible. And that's where the employer or the authority or whoever it is prevents you from engaging in practice which is essential to your religion. So, for example, we have the story in Acts chapter 5 of where the Jewish authorities told the apostles to stop preaching the gospel of Christ. And the apostle says we should obey God rather than men. So where obedience to God is at stake, that's kind of the exception to submission to earthly authorities. And I think Folau would say, well, obedience to God is at stake here. Part of the commands that I have from God, that all Christians have, is to proclaim our faith. And that's what Folau, at least in his view, was doing. Under section 772 of the Fair Work Act, which is the provision that Folau is relying on in his upcoming case, if Folau can prove religion was one of the reasons he was dismissed, he'll be successful. Now, it seems fairly clear to me that he was dismissed because of these posts on social media which come within the category of religious speech. The question is going to be whether the courts understand that as coming within the definition of religion. I think it should, because part of religion is not just the belief, but also the practice. But that remains to be seen. But what about in the passage we read, where it's Peter says that we should suffer because sometimes unjust things happen and we should just entrust ourselves to God like Jesus did. There's a tension there because we also see examples in the New Testament where the early apostles didn't just endure, they actually exercised their legal rights. So, for example, in Acts chapter 22, the Apostle Paul exercises his legal rights as a Roman citizen to avoid a beating by the authorities. And so perhaps Folau is taking a leaf out of Paul's book there and saying, look, we have these legal rights. We have that provision in the Fair Work Act which prevents dismissal on the basis of religion. And so I'm merely exercising my legal rights. And I don't think that's theological problematically because of the example we have from Paul. I think the fundamental problem which undergirds all these debates and which Folau really exposed was the expression of his beliefs on social media. Even many Christians who agreed with the general principles and sentiments which undergirded Folau's social media post said, look, we probably wouldn't have said it that way. We would have engaged in a little bit more nuance, given a little bit of more context, emphasized the fact that homosexuals and other groups, liars, adulterers, we're no better than them. They're no better than us. We are all equally sinners under God. And we all have the opportunity for redemption in Christ. But Folau's post at least came across as very kind of holier-than-thou judgy. And so perhaps a lot of these issues that we are experiencing as a society, these tensions between various competing groups with different ideas, a lot of these, I think, can be resolved through developing humility, patience, kindness as we interact with each other. I think that will diffuse a lot of the tension that we're experiencing. Thank you. All right, everyone, thank you. So we have lots of good questions here. I'm not sure we'll get through them all in time, but we'll see how we go. All right, so the first question is, do you have any comment on the accusation of corporate overreach in controlling the speech of employees, especially about their religious beliefs? My comment is merely that, yes, I think that is a problem, and I think it will become much more acute when... it will become much more acute because many corporations are now developing specific kind of inclusivity and diversity policies, which is fine and completely admirable. But the problem is that when you have, say, Christian beliefs, or it doesn't even have to be Christian beliefs, Muslim beliefs, Jewish beliefs, about sexuality, for example, that don't accord with those inclusivity and diversity policies, then you're going to have an increasing number of tensions in the workplace. And so in that sense, I think something like the Folau provision is useful for the protection of religious people in organisations. I think there are a few problems with the drafting and the specifics which need to be addressed, and I've mentioned some of those already. So I think this will increasingly become an issue. I think it is already an issue in many contexts, and often people just kind of stay quiet and don't rock the boat to prevent tensions. But I think there will come a point where these tensions become much more acute when these sorts of policies become more prolific and more enforced in larger organisations. Second question, if you were in Folau's position, how would you have worded your post? Is this still being recorded? No. Oh, look, at first, I'm not sure it's a good idea to put something like that in a social media post. It's ripe for misinterpretation, and it's likely to result in a lot of sort of social media rage. I think it's probably... particularly something like, I think it was an Instagram post, which, you know, isn't a great forum for important intellectual debates anyway. So how would I have worded it? Well, I think I would have emphasised a bit more, and Folau has done this in other contexts, just not in that context. I would emphasise a little bit more my own sinfulness, my own position as a sinner before God who deserves judgment, and say everyone is in this category, you know, no matter what your sex is, your gender, your sexual orientation, your gender identity, whatever it is, your race, your culture, all that doesn't matter in terms of our position before God as sinners. And then I would have emphasised the forgiveness that Christ freely offers to anyone, no matter what your background or your position is. So that's what I would have done in hindsight, having all of this behind us. But, I mean, at the same time, the thing with Folau is that he's not an academic like me. He's not a lawyer. He's not a theologian. He's a rugby player. Used to be a rugby player. I mean, is it reasonable to expect him to engage in that kind of nuanced debate? And if that is what we expect, are we in effect excluding much of the population from engaging in these debates just because they aren't able to put the arguments in, you know, sophisticated, nice ways that cultured people will accept? I think that's an important question, and I don't have an answer to that. Did you draw upon some of Bonhoeffer's insights into community when researching your PhD? Short answer, no. But I do think Bonhoeffer has a lot to offer. I'll just move on for the sake of time in relation to that. Would saying, "No one comes to God the Father except through Jesus Christ," paraphrasing John 14:6, under the current draft religious freedom legislation vilify persons who don't believe in Jesus Christ and are thus being told that they are on their way to hell? Well, first of all, we don't know, because we don't know how broad the definition of vilify is. But, I mean, even under a broad definition, I doubt that that would count as vilification. I think that would just be a statement of religious belief. It doesn't incite hatred or anything like that. Or I don't think it doesn't target any particular person in a vilifying way. I think because the focus is on... It is on the mechanism of salvation and not on the moral status of particular groups of people. That's a critical difference there between that statement and what Folau said. The one who judges justly has said, "Give unto Caesar what is Caesar's and give unto God what is God's." Folau has therefore acted with justification. This is the ultimate contract, obedience to God. That's more of a statement than a question. But, I mean, yes, although there's debate about what it means to give unto Caesar, Caesar's and give unto God what is God's. It's not easy these days to draw a distinction between the earthly realm, the city of man, and the heavenly realm, the city of God. And when there's a conflict between those two, obviously, you have to adhere to what God says. But, I mean, I think I've canvassed some of the issues there already in terms of whether Folau acted with justification or not. Oh, two questions. How closely can we draw parallels between slave/master relationships in the New Testament and employer/employee relationships today? Today's work relationships are voluntary, controlled by legislation. Both parties have rights before the law. Yeah, that's probably a fair question. Look, obviously you can't draw an exact parallel for those exact reasons. But I think there are certain parallels that one can draw in terms of the relationship between slaves and masters. I mean, look, in New Testament times, the thing to remember is that many slaves were actually better off materially than many freemen. The freemen didn't have guaranteed, you know, accommodation, food, work, all those sorts of things, and often lived in poverty. The slaves had all those things. Sure, they didn't have much in terms of legal rights, but they had, you know, they had accommodation and food provided and all those sorts of things. They were subject to the whims of the masters, but in some cases they were in a better position. So, no, I don't think we can draw an exact analogy, but in terms of submission to authority, I think that still stands. There is clearly a power imbalance, and even today in employee/employer relationships. Of course, these are governed, as we know, by legislation, such as the legislation that Folau is bringing his case under. But nevertheless, there's clearly a power imbalance, as we can see in the Folau example. He was sacked. And now he has to go to court to try to address that. Is the issue with the Folau case the extent of the punishment, i.e. not only not play for the Wallabies, but never play any code of football for anyone ever again? Seems vindictive. I think that is one issue, the disproportionality of the punishment compared to the conduct that he engaged in, especially when you consider some of the conduct that other football players have engaged in, like domestic violence or gambling or those sorts of things. I mean, there's clearly a disjunct there in terms of how Folau is being treated versus how others have been treated in terms of what they've done. So I think certainly the punishment is one issue, the disproportionality of it. But, I mean, that doesn't get away from the fundamental principle here, which is whether Folau should be entitled to express his religious beliefs outside of work. I think that's a more fundamental question than the punishment. And so that again, brings up the issue of the extent that employers can control the speech of employees. This question is basically another version of the question about whether the First Peter passage is applicable today, so I might skip over that for the sake of time. Another question. Can an employment contract restrict the religious freedom of an employee where the employee agrees/consents to that restriction? How does that apply for Christians in non-Christian workplaces or non-Christians in Christian workplaces? I mean, the short answer is yes. I think that an employment contract can potentially restrict the religious freedom of an employee if they consent to it. But at the same time, you can't contract out of human rights obligations. And secondly, statutory provisions override contractual obligations and contractual provisions. So even if Folau, for example, had a clause in his contract which says you shall not post things about homosexuals on social media or something along those lines, if that was viewed as restricting his religion, the Fair Work Act would override that, is my understanding. In principle, yes, you can have restrictions on employee speech, which is part of the terms of the contract, but that doesn't change the statutory or human rights obligations that exist. Now, how does that apply for Christians in non-Christian workplaces Well, I think that's actually very important. Question. So what many people raise is the analogy with something like religious schools. So why is everyone complaining about the fact that Folau has been sacked because of expressing his religious beliefs in a secular organisation? But if you have a secular person in a religious organisation who expresses secular beliefs, we have, for example, exemptions and anti-discrimination law, which allows that. So I think that's an important question. It seems, on the face of it, inconsistent. The distinction, in my view, is that the religious organisation has been specifically set up to cultivate a religious ethos, a religious community. And the religious community is not the only community that a secular person can be part of. So a person can, if they don't agree with the religious beliefs of the organisation, can go to a different school, either one which is religious but doesn't have such a stringent set of requirements, or a state school. The Folau situation is different because Folau has no alternate employment. And rugby union is not an ideological organisation inherently. It doesn't have a specific ethos which it's attempting to cultivate. It can have general inclusivity and diversity provisions, but that's not a specific religious ethos which is based in the doctrines of a religion. And if Folau doesn't adhere to that, it's not as if he has many other employment options, as we've seen. So I think there is a distinction there in terms of the inherent requirements, if you like, of a religious organisation and being an employee of a religious organisation versus the inherent requirements of being an employee of a secular organisation. We're out of time.
So please join me in thanking Alex for speaking.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.